Listen in. It's time to talk about transitions into management positions or internationalization in exotic destinations. We could parlay over testing and progressive applications or talk relationships, but mainly please don't leave for other stations.
There are many fun and pretty useful things to know. You might even learn some on the Angular Plus show.
Hey, welcome to the Angular Plus show, where app developers of all disciplines gather to share their insights and experiences, and hopefully shed some light that will help you in your journey. I'm your host, Jennifer Wadella. Let's get started.
Hey, it's Nicole Oliver from the Angular Plus show. Do you ever feel like you spend so much time typing out code that when it comes to speak with an actual human in person, it feels kind of awkward and almost alien? I know it does for me. That's why I love going to events like ngConf. Not only do they gather the absolute greatest minds in the industry under one roof, but they also create a safe, fun environment for developers to connect. And you can meet us, the panelists, as well as many of our guests there. For tickets and to find out more, go to ngconf.org. That's ng-conf.org.
That's the trailing punchline, is you're supposed to bitch about the situation and then we come in with the...
Yes. Okay.
Dude, how do you have pregnancy brain?
Restart.
Okay.
I don't know, man. Just paternity leave is so rough, right? I mean, it's like, why do we only get like a few weeks here in the US? It's bogus.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people have been campaigning for better paternity leave. An old friend of mine actually like got it redone for his company. But wait, B-Love, run your own company. What the hell?
I know. That's the problem. Well, the problem is when you only have two people that are like generating revenue, when one person takes off, there goes 50% of your revenue. So we're going to do well, though. I'm planning on taking 4 weeks and we'll see how it goes. So
nice.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, like 6 months would be nice. Like some people I've chatted with, like, you know, Norway or whatever, Sweden, they get like 6 months off. Like that's such a fantastic thing. Does Germany get 6 months?
Yes, and I get reminded of it all the time. Yeah, but like one of our biggest tech employers in Kansas City, Cerner, is a healthcare company, and I think their paternity leave is 2 weeks.
Oh,
and they're
wow.
a healthcare
so
company.
Generous.
Oh, no.
And you're just like,
what do you do with 2 weeks? Like, like you're still in a fog, I imagine, after 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, let us know if we can like meal train for you or anything, buddy, to help you guys survive.
That would be nice.
Yes.
That would be nice.
All right. Well, we are back for another episode. So I'd like to welcome you all to the Angular Plus show, where app developers of all disciplines gather to share their insights and experiences. Today, I'm your host, Jennifer Wadella, and with me are my co-hosts, Brian Love and Nicole Oliver, and very excited to introduce our guest, Luca. So Luca, would you like to introduce yourself for us?
Sure. Hi, everyone. And thanks for listening. My name is Luca Mezzalira. I'm a principal solution architect in AWS and I'm based in London, United Kingdom.
Very cool. So this is actually the first of a four-part series we are kicking off about micro frontends. And I feel like Luca is the household name for talking about micro frontends. You even have a book out on O'Reilly, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So we are very excited to have you here to share your experience with us and introduce our audience to micro frontends, why they're useful, and what problems they do solve. So I guess to start things off, why don't you tell us a little bit more about your background into micro frontend architecture and what that journey has looked like for you?
Sure. I started back in 2016. So it's been a while that I'm playing around in this world. And I have to say it was quite challenging because back in the days, there wasn't even the name micro frontend. Everyone was calling micro UI, micro apps, wherever. But in reality, let's say it's nothing new, I would say. We were discussing last week with a friend of mine. There were some implementation of micro frontends back in the days, aka Java portlets. But I would say now we started to rationalize better the concept. So in the last 7 years, I, apart from building my front ends, not only for web, but also for smart TVs, console, and a few other low-end devices for a company called The Zone, that is a live streaming sport platform. I also consult quite a few companies around the world in my position in AWS for starting the journey in microfront ends or reviewing architecture or providing, let's say, best practices or anti-patterns. And therefore, my role basically was exploring very in deep this architecture pattern.
Cool. What's that, Bilev?
I have a question. So micro front ends, you started working in micro front ends years ago. What was the problem that you were trying to solve? Kind of obviously micro front ends addresses certain problems. Kind of, can you talk about some of those problems that you were addressing back in the day as well as today?
Sure. So we, back in the days in 2016, we were growing very fast. So we moved from, just to give you an idea, from 14 people in tech department. And in 2 years, we arrived to have 550, something like that, distributed in Europe.
Woo. That is fast.
That is faster, right? So the challenge there is that you need to find a way to design an architecture that has a key characteristic, the modularity concept. Because mainly the idea is you can be modular at the code level, but there are some constraints that you need to think about. And therefore you start to go at an higher level. So you start to look at the architecture level. How can you be modular at the architecture level? And the only answer for me back in the days that we were migrating from monolithic architecture, backend and frontend, on the backend was microservices, but on the frontend there wasn't a specific architecture.
Right.
And therefore for achieving that, knowing that we were spread across Europe, was finding a concept of distributed architecture on the front end. That basically was the main reason why I looked to something similar to microfront ends, despite at the beginning we weren't calling like that.
Got it. So when you say distributed architecture, do you mean in terms of like framework or technology choices, or can you kind of clarify that a little bit for us?
Yeah, sure. So what we wanted to achieve was having autonomous team that they can take their own decisions inside certain guardrails. Because I think we learn a lot from microservices. I think we have seen what was working, what wasn't working, and still we are learning in that world. And what I did was starting from the principle microservices and trying to understand if they were applicable to microfront ends, so the front end basically. And I found a lot of overlap there. So that those principles were basically our North Star for creating our architecture.
Were the teams that you were working on at that time, were they sort of divided by feature, or did they have sort of like a broader scope?
At the beginning, they weren't, and there was some complexity based on that specific workload. Mm-hmm. So the first thing, as I mentioned, we were working on web, but vast majority of our customers were on living room devices. And we had different targets that we need to cover. The challenge of having a cross-functional team was mainly that we were risking to facilitate a specific platform over others. And we couldn't afford that because we had several implementations. We were designing APIs that were working on native iOS, native Android, Android TV, Samsung Tizen, LG WebOS, Roku, and whatever. At the end, when I left the company, there were roughly 40 different targets that we were that we were managing. Many of them, thanks God, we could manage through JavaScript, and therefore you could create a sort of unique code base with some branches in the logic. But the reality was impossible to have one team that could cover everything end to end. So we had to create some teams that were focusing on the API that has to collaborate with certain mechanism with other teams that were focusing on the front end. And those front end teams were spread across Europe. One thing though that we, I think we did very right at the beginning, that I think nowadays is well-known practice thanks to the work that was made on Team Topology's book that were describing how to create these teams that were centralized for the console platform team and decentralized for creating features and other parts and specialized team. I think we applied basically that concept way before the book was written, because in reality we had what we call the core team was trying to get sense of the common parts of the microfrontends architecture, and then we had at the same time teams that were specialized on specific domains. So we had like the catalog team, we had another one that was on the authentication part, and then we had some special team that were dedicated to very complex projects, like for instance for us the video player on those platform. We roughly had one video player per platform. So that shares with you the complexity that we were handling back in the days. And as you can imagine, having this kind of component that was then consumed by multiple microfrontends was a challenge as well, because you handle these kind of things in different ways.
Wow, that's incredible to hear, just because I think a lot of us have probably not worked at that level before, just working with so many different teams across so many different platforms. That's incredible. I've heard a lot about like, you know, micro front ends before, but I don't have like tons of experience with all the different types. And I know that there are like different techniques for implementing them. I was wondering if we could like kind of talk a little bit about those different techniques and like why you would use them.
Sure. So on microfrontends, you can, first of all, you need to decide what you're optimizing for. So you can do client-side rendering, you can do server-side rendering, you can even do edge-side rendering. And there are pros and cons on every technique, as you can imagine. So I would say the client-side rendering probably is the most common one when you want to divide your application either in multiple single page applications or in if you have like a very large application with a lot of usability and you want to create an immersive experience for your users, and then you have multiple microfrontends in the same view that are composed by different frameworks. Probably we will go more in deep about that later on in the episode. On the edge side, instead, you tend to have static catalogs, for instance. IKEA is a great example that was shared by, I think in 2018, last time that I read about this, and they are using edge side include, that is a well-known technology, was brought to the W3C from Akamai and Oracle. And what they do is basically is composing microfrontends at the CDN level. And it's interesting because obviously it scales very nicely, but at the same time, the developer experience and the implementation is not always easy. Because as you can imagine, dealing with a CDN and deploying a CDN might be more complicated than what we are used to. Sure. And then server-side rendering instead is probably another very complex implementation, because in reality, what you need to do is doing isomorphic application and composing your application on the server, but at the same time, you want to have interactivity, and therefore you need to figure out how you decouple the business logic of your microfrontends and hydrate on the client side, but at the same time, you want to centralize the common dependencies. Like if you're using Angular, for instance, you don't want to have 35 different types of Angular. You want to have just one, because you optimize also for performances.
So I feel like microservices, well-established concept, and people like just haven't quite wrapped around micro front ends, and we're solving very different problems where you can't draw a strict comparison. So do you have like a go-to definition that you start with when broaching the concept of micro front ends? Like, how do you define that for somebody who's new to this as a concept architecturally?
Yeah, I think it's very important to understand microfrontends are different from components. So I, for communicating this to the engineering team that I was working with, I created like a definition that I'm still using because I think it's very effective. So I think microphone tents are a representation of a business subdomain. If you're familiar with domain-driven design, you know that you take a domain that is an application or workload, and you try to slice it in from the business perspective more than from a technical perspective. And that is what microphone tents are from that point of view. Then definitely are independent. So every team should be autonomous and deploy independently with some coordination time to time. Obviously, they are not silos, but at the same time, they can move at the speed that they want. Moreover, microphone tents are also they're trying to share, let's say, less code possible because we are in front of a distributed system. The moment that you deal with distributed systems, external dependencies are basically jeopardizing the benefit of a distributed system. So you need to be mindful on how you're going to handle that part. And finally, the ownership concept, I think, is quite important. Every team should own at least one microphone tent. The ownership part, I think, is important because when you, I have experienced myself, and I think quite a few of our listeners and maybe also you have experienced this situation where people are not only handling they're handling mainly the development phase, but not the CI/CD, and that is completely detached from the front end developers. And that, in my opinion, is something that it shouldn't be like that, especially in 2022, where I think there are a lot of abstractions let's say tools that allows you to have a very cool developer experience. And developers also on the front end side should understand hand to end how to not only write the code for the front end, but also how to maintain the code in production and the observability tools and everything that is around, like you would do that in a microservice fashion.
Cool. So if you had like the ideal setup where, because I know a lot of us come from the consulting world and we typically walk into less than ideal scenarios, but let's say you're walking into a client and you know there's a good need for micro front ends and you're trying to help them adopt this architectural approach and then set up the business infrastructure to support it. What are some of the key things that you would try and implement right away?
So first of all, probably it's me that I'm too strict, but I don't write any code if I don't have the CI/CD set up. For me, that is the mandatory thing. In every company that I work for, the first thing is, it doesn't matter if it takes a month, but I want to have the CI/CD set up, because when I have done that, I know for sure that I can start to focus on the code, and for a certain period of time, because I'm against also thinking that you do one time upfront and you forget about your CI/CD. CI/CD for me is way more important than just replicating, having a way to replicate your code and deploy in production. I think that usually that is my first step. So I create a CI/CD based on, I need to generate an artifact that, let's take client-side rendering. So it generates a JavaScript, CSS, and HTML, and I need to store that somewhere, and I need to then be able to promote my artifacts across multiple environments. These are the key requirements. So in somehow, I will try to figure out what the company is doing, what are the tools that they're using, if they're using some tools, hopefully, and what are the practices. And then from there, when I have this basic, I start to think about, okay, what other things we need? We need definitely testing. Do we want to have static analysis? Do we want to have visual regression testing? Do we want to have some specific functionality around, I don't know, introducing a design system, and every microphone tent should have a specific version? So those are things that you can do later on, but first thing first for me is having the CI/CD nailed.
Cool. I feel like that's great. And that's something that I've definitely see as a problem for micro front end architectures that I've worked for, especially publishing to an internal registry that would just gridlock the team sometimes for like 4 to 8 hours. And then nobody can consume the latest and continue working. So is this something, and I'm so not an AWS person, like, do you all have internal tools that help support some of this work?
Yeah, totally. We have Code Pipeline that is a service composed by multiple other services that allows you to, for instance, having a version of control, having the possibility to deploy in production or build your application. At the end, it's running behind the scenes on containers that is more or less the latest and greatest of many of the CI tools that are over there. And I'm a big fan, to be honest, of using containers, because very often we think during CI/CD that every single step should run sequentially. But in reality, you can run certain things in parallel. Like, for instance, I always make the example, if you have 1,000 tests that you want to run, instead of running 1,000 in one container, you can split it. And then it's way faster, because I think speed matters in CI. In reality, very often developers are trying to find a workaround for not going through the CI because the CI are not optimized. Instead, if it takes a couple of minutes, everyone will go through there. And the feedback that you get is way more valuable than finding workarounds or finding other ways, because they are just frustrating. Therefore, they are finding ways to handle. But unfortunately, they more often than not, they try to deploy in different environments that are not representing staging or production, and that is a problem.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think a consultant loses their wings every time somebody disables unit tests to get a deployment through.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Okay, this is really awesome to hear, because I feel like DevOps is always a fight, and like getting good process in place is such a critical piece of micro front ends. It's cool to hear that out. But I want to kind of talk about what you said with testing, because I feel like I hear a lot of teams really struggle with this. So we've said, okay, it's ideal to have feature-focused development teams that are pushing out their code. But at the end of the day, they're still pushing pieces of a whole application that needs to communicate. But if I'm a developer and I have tunnel vision on just my feature, what happens if I make a change and then interaction with another micro front end is broken because something happens at the consumption level? Like, how do you test around that? How do you facilitate that? What does good solutions look like?
Yeah, I think before answering the testing part, we need to understand how to communicate, because I think the devil is in the details, right? So let's start from there. I think the communication with Mike front end has to be loosely coupled. Many companies and many teams that I have seen are using a global state management system for communicating with Mike front end. The problem with that is like in microservices, using one database for multiple microservices. You are basically introducing a design coupling anti-pattern that is not only technical, but probably more important is at the organizational level. So the moment that you have a common state management between micro front ends, it means that if two micro front ends are rely on the same property, and at some point, one team decides to change it, now you need to test two micro front ends, because you need to make sure that nothing is broken. And that basically is going against the concept of distributed system. So if we want to have a loosely coupled solution, but highly aligned, like we want on micro front ends, we need to look at different design patterns. And the classic design pattern when we want loosely coupled systems is a publish-subscribe pattern. That can be expressed on the client side with reactive streams. It could be expressed with an event emitter. It could be expressed with custom events. So those are three of the ways that I warmly recommend to, let's say, do the communication between micro front ends, because what it means is, in the scenario that you describe, if someone wants to change something, at the end is triggering an event. Worst case scenario, it won't be picked up by another micro front end. But there are ways to mitigate that part as well. But in general, you are not breaking, or you're not going with runtime errors that are happening, preventing the user to use the entire application. So instead, you are dispatching an event, and worst case scenario, no one is listening. And also allows you to test better, because if you define your input and output of every micro front end, it means that every team can test what's going on and what they expect. And as long as the contract is respected, everyone will work in parallel. And that's why I'm saying loosely coupled and highly aligned, because if you are aligned behind an API contract, in this case our events, then you are in a position to extend your microphone tents and hide the implementation details and change them as long the input and outputs remain the same. Moreover, if tomorrow there is a new, let's say, team that has to work in the same view, and they don't need to coordinate with the rest of the team. They just say, okay, so these are the events that are bubbling around during the event. I want to plug to this one and that one. And I want to create a third one. And they just need to tell the other teams that potentially they can subscribe to that event.
So would you say...
Go ahead.
Would you say that in that scenario, a developer has to take a different approach to like error handling or something like that? I mean, like because you're loosely coupling, I don't know. I just feel like error handling becomes more important in that case.
True. We need to take error handling in a different way compared to what we were handling everything before. The first error usually is when you load the microphone 10. That's the first one, because that is a new dimension that we didn't have before. Because, for instance, a single page application, you either load the code or you don't load. It's very binary. Mm-hmm. But now you can have a portion of the application that is loaded and the portion is not. So what do you do then? Do you throw an error that blocks the entire experience? Do you gracefully hide the microphone then that is not loaded? Because in reality, it's not important for the goal that the user has to do in that specific view. It's up to the team and the context to drive this decision. But in reality, yeah, you're right. You start to have type of errors that before we didn't have, and we need to be mindful. Very, very often, I've seen implementation where the error boundaries weren't thought properly, and therefore the entire application was throwing an error. But in reality, it shouldn't happen. If you think about that, you can decide that that specific microphone band is nice to have. Is not a must have, and therefore you can hide it or maybe create a logic for retry to fetch the microphone 10. And that is not only because there is an issue on the deployment side. It could be that on mobile, there is a networking issue. So I'm in mobility, I'm running somewhere and I'm consulting my microphone 10's website and I'm going through a tunnel and I lost the signal. So what do I do?
Sure, yeah, that makes sense.
I have a question, Luca. Going back, you talk about this decoupled communication patterns, and I think you mentioned three of them. One was kind of, you know, dispatching events or some sort of like stream of events or something you kind of mentioned. Can you kind of break those down real quick for the listener? Maybe talk about some of the pros and cons to each one. Maybe what are your recommendations around that decoupled communication between your MFEs?
Yeah, sure. So custom events are native in JavaScript, so you can use them. I cannot say that these are pro and cons, but usually handle at the window level. So an event has to bubble up to the window and then you listen from the window, obviously. Yep. And that basically, I'm not a big fan of them because you need to bubble the event across multiple layers. That is not nice. And if you don't want to go through there, it means that you understand the structure of the DOM. And that is something that I tend to avoid, because if I know, for instance, that one microphone 10 is close to another one, and therefore I don't append my listener to the window, but to, another object, it means that I understand where my microphone 10 is. And that means there is a leak of the main that is a problem. So you can use them. But I'm not, a big fan of that. Reactive streams I recommend for teams that are very used to work with the reactive programming. Now, we know that reactive programming is far to be a walk in the park. So you need to understand that. You need to understand how it works. You need to understand the different operators and so on and so forth. So that Yeah.
Can I stop you real quick there? Because I imagine some of our listeners, especially in the Angular world, when we think of reactive streams, we think of like RxJS. Is that what you're referring to? Correct. Or is there like kind of another idea that you're talking about?
No, it's exactly RxJS in the world of Angular, but in general, any reactive streams library. For instance, there were some interesting implementation that were doing exactly that, not for MicroFrontend, but for what is called ModeView Intent. That is another front-end architecture that was leveraged by CycleJS, if you're familiar with that. And they were using reactive streams for communicating between the model, the intent, and the view for creating a unidirectional flow of the communication. Very, very interesting, to be honest.
And so using a reactive stream, now I'm not coupled to the DOM, right? I don't need to know where I'm adding this event listener, right?
You could potentially inject a subject in all the MicroFrontends, and then you communicate through that because it's bidirectional, so you can handle that.
That's perfect.
So I have a question because state management is a huge part of what we do. And at some point, if you have a cohesive application, you need a concept of a global state because multiple things may be subscribing to that. And so how do you approach that in light of using just a reactive pattern or what are some strategies around that?
So in that case, the communication, once again, should be, nailed around events more than state, because the state should be on inside the MicroFrontend. The moment that you leak the state in a greater, a container of MicroFrontends, you are leaking the domain, and therefore you are not autonomous anymore. So the risk of, and that's why at the beginning I said we need to understand the difference between components and MicroFrontends. A component, for instance, the whole point is a technical reusability. Therefore, the domain by design is leaked outside. So the container knows how to interact with the component, what to inject, whatever. But in MicroFrontends, the domain has to remain inside the MicroFrontend itself. And therefore, the global state in reality, if you need that, you can either communicate with the backend because you find a way that the MicroFrontend knows that something happened in the backend and then it has to refetch the state of the new things. But in reality, you tend to avoid on the client side to have a global state. The moment that you start to think about global state, it means that it's shared. And when it's shared, every time that you change a portion of this global state, you might have to retest everything, or even affecting other teams and coordinate the effort for changing something that is global. And that is basically the challenge that you face, especially when you have nowadays distributed teams, because the scalability of this kind of solution start to be a problem.
Okay, so can we do a real world scenario exercise of how you would handle something? Okay, so let's say we have an app to order pizza. Okay. And so you've got a team and there's a team responsible for the cart that's containing your order. And there's a team responsible for the pizza. And maybe there's a team responsible for your toppings.
Yeah.
And so me as a developer, I'm thinking, okay, what is the piece of state that I need to update? Because my diagram that's showing my pizza, if I add a topping to it, I want that topping to be displayed on my pizza. But then the cart also needs to know about that because it needs to update the pricing. So how would you break down that approach to build this?
I would say that a new topping is added. So I expect that the pizza team is responsible for listening to this specific request. And then the same for the cart. In the cart case, because it may be that you pass an event, is something happened. So it's not a command, it's an event. And therefore, as event, you describe what happened. So it could be topping ID 123 is added. So the pizza team knows they have an API for understanding what kind of toppings has to display in the pizza. And the cart team instead has an API for retrieving from that specific ID what kind of price they need to add on the final price for the checkout. In that case, you are maintaining the segregation between boundaries, and then you will handle the, let's say, the application independently. Because now, if tomorrow you want to evolve and it's not anymore a topping, is something else that you want to add, the pizza, like a special stuffed offer crust with Coke, yeah, wherever, you can do that. But everyone is maintaining his own let's say capability.
I have a quick question there, Luca, because I think maybe just for myself and also for the listener, when you're talking about these different micro front ends having a quote API, I just want to clarify, we're not talking about an API like a REST API or a GraphQL. Like, we're not talking to the back end, right? We're talking about an API between my micro front ends. That's kind of that contract that understands that when this event or this, you know, kind of thing comes through the stream, I react accordingly. Is that correct, or am I misunderstanding?
No, it's a backend API. So
it is a backend. Okay.
Yeah, because if you think about that, the cart. So if you start to have all the information related to how the other microfrontends should behave, then basically you're not triggering an event. You are triggering a command because you are telling someone that they have to add a topping, this specific topic with these characteristics. And for the cart, you passing also the price. But who the menu, wherever it is that has triggered this action, in reality, shouldn't care about that.
Right.
So what we are trying to do is having a segregation of the different domains in a way that everyone can handle it in different ways. That means, for instance, that you, it becomes very simple to test that specific, let's say, menu that you are adding toppings, because in reality, you're just saying, I'm adding a topping. This is the idea of the topping. So I think also, logically speaking, the team responsible for that specific part, he has a really tiny logic to test and to maintain, because code is a liability. And we need to figure out the way how we can, let's say, create those boundaries that will facilitate our life, especially when you are in production.
Understood. So in this instance, and I love Jennifer's kind of scenario here, in this instance, when I add that topping, I'm going to kind of tell my backend, hey, topping has been added for this user or this customer or whatever it is. And then that's going to stream data into all of my micro front ends that then are going to react accordingly.
If you have like, I don't know, a GraphQL implementation for subscription, yeah definitely. If you have REST API, probably you will dispatch a client side event saying this is happening, and every micro front end will pick
goes
up
out and gets the, it.
Sorry?
And then every MFE goes out and makes a request to that backend to basically refresh that. So would you say in this instance, and I know this is, I'm probably oversimplifying this, but in this instance, kind of instead of having shared state in the client side, we're moving state to the backend and that becomes the single source of truth?
It depends from the application. There are certain situations where you might want to have everything on the client or vast majority on the client side. So for instance, in Electron application, I have seen that they are storing in a database on the client, but it depends. Yeah. In this example, I would design it that way.
Understood. Got it. Yeah. Thank you. Go ahead, Jennifer.
There are so many other things that I want to ask you about that you're working on, Luca. So I want to just kind of put it out there. Are we comfortable wrapping this kind of basic intro to implementing micro front ends to move on to some other stuff, or do we have any wrap up questions?
I have a question. I don't think it'll take that long. I'm just curious, like in the beginning, you mentioned that like micro front ends wasn't like so much of a concept like 5 years ago, like still kind of being thought about. Do you think that was like a technical limitation or like an evolution in like the way that we think about web programming?
I think it's an evolution because the reality is we started to have more and more the need of working with multiple teams on the front-end applications. And the patterns that we had before were all on the monolithic side, where they require a certain modularity on the code side with discipline for the developers. And when you maintain a code base for 3 years, You want to have consistency, because otherwise everyone will complain that it's legacy code they won't be very happy to work on that. So I think now we are, what was missing in the front end, we are starting to rationalize potential implementation for working with multiple teams in large applications. There were some ideas, but it wasn't, in my opinion, rationalized enough. We didn't spend enough time in the front-end community to understand, okay, how can we divide this thing in a way that makes sense. The only thing that we discuss is, let's create a bunch of components. And then we review that. But the problem with the components is that very often, they are not self-sufficient. So there is someone else that has to create the glue and put everything together. And moreover, because it's cool creating abstractions, and I was a developer for several years, and the first thing that you do usually when you find, oh, I have these two occurrences in two parts of the application, let's do an abstraction. But the reality is abstraction are expensive if they are premature and you use at the end maybe twice inside your workload. Sometimes, you know, I'm not against having some duplicated code, because if it's developed by two different teams and they can maintain it and these 10 lines of code, honestly, it's more the burden of abstracting and then maintaining that in 5 years, the abstraction and maintaining also everything in sync, then giving them the possibility to evolve their code base in the way they want. Because vast majority of the time, when you have a shared component, at some point, the product will come and say, listen, in this occurrence, I would like to see as it is. But in the other one, I would like to change slightly this color or this label. And then you start to branch the code. And then you have if else. And every time you make a change, that basically has to be tested in two parts of the application, not in one. So that's why I'm saying we need to be mindful on how much we want to share.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I've been through that so many times.
Tell me about that.
What you're saying is we need to get comfortable with being a little less dry if we want maintainable micro front ends.
Yes, but if it's funny, because when I was working on my book on micro front ends, there was the 20th anniversary for the Pragmatic Programmer book. And the author said that the most misunderstood principle was dry. So don't repeat yourself. There was an interview during a podcast, I don't remember the name of the podcast, but it was extremely funny. He was saying, yes, but we are not saying that if you have two lines of code that are identical abstract, what we are saying is at the business level, you should don't repeat yourself, because obviously you are mapping some code around that. And that is, for me, very cool, because very often I had developers saying, Luca, you are saying to duplicate code, but in reality, we need to do dry. So yes, I know the principle perfectly, but there are some drawbacks also in that.
Oh man, too funny. All right. So I want to switch gears slightly because this is largely an Angular audience. And a lot of us spend a lot of time building Angular JS applications. And if you want to upgrade, moving from Angular JS to modern Angular is pretty massive. And I feel like that's been a big use case in our community for looking to micro front ends as a possible solution from moving to an out of date tech debt nasty monolith to a micro front end. So if you were coaching somebody on moving from an outdated, you know, monolith application and embracing a micro front end approach, what are some ways that they could begin facilitating that transition? What pieces do they have to have in place other than CI/CD? We know that now.
And I think Angular as a framework is very lucky, because you are using Webpack out of the box. So you have with Webpack 5 Mod Federation, fantastic implementation for transporting. It's not for micro front end, let's state that. It's for transporting a portion of your code that could be either a library, component, and micro front ends create autonomous entities that can be run together alongside in the same application. So that is something that you have out of the box. That the first thing that I would say. Then there are other things that we need to think about. So one benefit of micro front ends, because they are autonomous, it doesn't mean that you need to rewrite entirely your application before you go live. So you can take a slice of your application and then deploy the developing microphone tens and deploy that part alongside the old application. And that is an interesting approach because basically we are bringing the concept of a strangler pattern into the front-end world. So you can have, let's say, your legacy application that is, for instance, handling portion of the application, the part that you didn't develop yet, and the new microfront ends are running alongside. So you might or might not, depends how you handle that, having the same design system. Therefore, for the user will be identical, the look and feel, but for the developers, it would be great because they can go and do the hand-to-hand experience for taking the code from their laptop to production, and also the observability part, understand how the things are working, the performance part, and slowly but steady replacing their application. That is, for instance, one thing that I encourage and implemented in my previous company using Lambda the Edge, that is a compute service that is available in CloudFront, that is the AWS CDN. And is a great way for slowly but steady, based on the URL, basically redirecting the user towards one part of the application or the new one. That was another thing. And I would say the other thing that we need to be aware when we do this transition is around how we are sharing stuff like a token, like let's assume a JWT token. In the case of a JWT token, we can share through a cookie or local storage. As long as the microfront ends are served by the same server, then we will be able to access whatever we want, local storage or the cookie. Obviously, local storage is more strict in the way how we can, let's say, access it through the security design of the local storage. In the case of cookies, we can enable also multiple subdomains. In the case of local storage, we cannot. So there is a local storage per subdomain. So we need to be aware of that part. But that's a way for microphone tens to communicate together and share the same, let's say, authentication system.
So the strangler pattern that you mentioned, that might be a new one for some of our listeners. Can you kind of define what that is? Like, it makes sense to me for this context, but yeah.
Yeah, the strangler pattern is used when you want to migrate from a legacy application to a distributed system. Because of the nature of distributed system, you can develop a portion of the application and run it in production. And what the strangler pattern does is that slowly but steady, every time that you have a new service, or in our case, a new path of the website that is available in production, you can test it and release in production, and basically you are strangling the monolithic code base or the legacy application till you arrive to the full implementation end to end with the new approach that in this case is microfront 10. The beauty of this approach is that it's well known, especially in microservices world, and it can be handled very easily. I usually recommend to do that at the infrastructure level more than the client side level, because the client side means that you are polluting your code with a bit of the old world and a bit of the new world. And as we said, code is liability. If you don't want to introduce bugs, it's better that this code or this logic is running outside the application, either on the application server or edge compute or whatever you feel more comfortable to handle that. So usually this is the suggestion that I gave.
So routing, I feel like, is something that hangs up a lot of people when they start to get in, because single page applications, a huge part of that concept is we handle routing completely different, where we are loading up JavaScript dynamically instead of, you know, resending an index.html page. So let's spend a little bit of time on this. Like, okay, we're embracing a micro front end architecture. And I'm used to my Angular brain, where I just have my Angular router and I serve up this component and contains all my different things. But if I'm moving to a structure where I have a host element and I no longer have control of my router at the Angular level, how do I figure out what a user is going to see when they navigate to a product page for stuffed crust pizza?
Yeah, so usually in microfront ends, you have a container that is available for the entire user session that we call application shell. This container is responsible to load one or multiple microphone tens, depends from the implementation, based on the first level of your website. So if your website is, mypizza.com, the first level would be landing page. So mypizza.com/landing page is one, and then you have another one, mypizza.com/order, and so on. So those are the first level. And there you can load one microphone 10 that is owned by a single team that maybe handle the landing page in this case, or you can, in certain occasion, you can be more granular. So you can, load a dumb container that is representing the multiple views on the multiple microphone tens. In that case, basically, you are delegating the first level to the application shell, and then the rest of the URL, so everything that is after landing page, will be delegated to the team or the teams that are responsible for that a subdomain, because once again we're trying to avoid to have some domain that leaks. Ideally, the application shell should be able to be used in multiple applications, so the less the application shell knows, the better will be. So the domain specific part are handled by one or multiple teams that are defining how what's happening after basically the first level. So second level onwards, they can do whatever they want, and that is an approach that I find very common in many of the implementations that I have experienced with my customers, and also in the community, that many people are assigning a specific URL to a team or multiple teams, and then they handle themselves. And that is a good pattern for starting this journey on the routing part.
Okay, so another scenario. We have our pizza ordering application, and one of the micro front ends is displaying like what that pizza looks like with whatever toppings are on it. But then we have a team and it's a group order for personal pan pizzas. And so we have a micro front end that's responsible for displaying what that pizza looks like. But then the team that owns that URL for a group order, they also want to consume that micro front end, but then use it in a slightly different way because they want to have like 8 instances of it to add to their group order to make it easier for office luncheons. What kind of structure or patterns would work for that?
So the microphone tender has to be available in multiple domains. The first question that I would raise is, do we need the microphone tender? Do we need a component? Because the moment okay. that we need to have someone that is aware about the domain, and you want something instead that is reusable and is used across multiple parts, if the domain has to leak, and in that case, it might be a challenge. But you could implement also with microphone tens. So for instance, imagine that you have this scenario where you want to display multiple, in the group order, you want to display multiple pizzas, how they look like. So potentially you can say every microphone tend, you just pass the ID of the pizza or the configuration, and they handle by themselves. So they have their own logic for retrieving the composition of that specific ID, or potentially you can create a container for the group that basically is handling the request, one request to the server, and then is injecting on multiple components that are these pizza rendering component, the specific look and feel. So you have multiple ways to handle it. I think it depends not only from a technical perspective, but also from an organizational one. How many teams are working on this project and how we're going to handle, because unfortunately, very often we tend to forget that our design decisions are not affecting only us, are affecting also the people that our teammates and the people are working with us. So sometimes we need to understand which trade-off works better. And that's why I'm not, prescriptive in the way how I suggest to do things, but more try to understand what reason well for you, because the moment that you are creating an external dependency, then you need to deal with that. And it's far to be pleasant when you have multiple of them, because if it's one occurrence, fine. It happens once, so who cares? But if it happens tens of times, then you regret that you go to with the distributed system.
I feel like I'm probably not the only one who has this like brain block of like, no, I don't want to rewrite code that already exists. But like, the more I hear you talk about it, the more it seems like a necessary evil for successful micro front end patterns at scale.
It could happen. I mean, the reality is sometimes there are teams that can work with the monolithic architecture, despite that there are like tens of them working on the same application, because maybe it's been a while that they're working, they are all senior, are very disciplinated, they know the patterns that they decided, they agree with the vision and everything. The problem is when you have like many teams that are fragmented and maybe you have different skill set inside and you want to, let's say, scale because you know that the application is going to scale in a different way, or they want to have high reusability. So in that case, you need to tweak the way how we do things. In modern architecture, recently, many of the big names like Neil Ford or Mark Richards has stated, now it was 2019, that in reality, design patterns are recommended practice, not best practices. And that's very important because that changed completely the concept of right or wrong in software development, that in reality shouldn't exist because we are working in an empiric environment, is not scientific. So we know upfront that two teams with the same requirements will create a similar output, not the same. So we already know this. And therefore it's very important for us that we understand the trade-offs. So we understand what is the right approach and validate multiple approaches, not discarding upfront, and start to say which one is the less worse. And then based on that, you start to implement the implementation. That doesn't mean it's going to be right the first time. Could be that you started with you didn't have all the information needed for making that call, and then you go through a path that it doesn't provide the benefit that you thought, and then you need to go back to the whiteboard and rethink it.
I feel like you have a calling as a life coach for developers. Like, I feel like this is what my soul needs to hear. Have somebody tell me on a daily basis, just dropping nuggets left and right. So I did want to ask you, as we're kind of on the routing topic, you have a project that you are working on. Will you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I do. So currently, one of the things that I believe is missing, or we didn't spend time, because again, it's fairly new, despite the 7 years that we are working on with Microfrontends, it's not that much overall. One thing on the client side rendering that we are lacking at the moment is how we do the discovery part of Microfrontends. So there are many companies that are creating their own solutions and they, I don't know, they inject during CI the list of Microfrontends that are available, or they generate an import maps inside an HTML and then they use that. There are different solutions. In reality though, if we are capable to say to the application shell, you have some routes and those routes are retrieved dynamically and to be defined what it means dynamically. It could be a call to a JSON, static JSON file, or it could be an API, whatever. Then we open up a very, very interesting scenario, because one of the things that I always am by about microservices is the possibility to deploy and shape the traffic towards one version of the microservice and not the other one. So that means potentially what we could say is I release a new Microfrontend and I want 10% of the traffic going to the new Microfrontend, so I see how it behaves, but there are 90% of the traffic is going to the other one. So now if I make this request to these, let's say endpoint or API that allows me to tell you are in the bucket of the 10%, but all the nine and the next nine customer will be in the 90%, I can de-risk the deployment of my Microfrontends, reducing the blast radio and start to have the observability there that is giving me the feedback that I was looking for as a developer for, let's say, understanding that my Microfrontend didn't introduce any bug, is performing in the same way or even better than the previous one, and I can move forward. And that is, I would say, a parachute for every developer, that up to now we were dealing with feature flags, we were dealing with A/B testing, but we were anyway deploying, let's say, a chunk of code that is branched and we have some logic that was running here and there. Here instead we can literally doing, if you want, A/B testing with shaping traffic and all the other things, because we can implement canary releases, and we can implement on top of that those feature flags and other things. But we are adding one part that we didn't have before, like handling this kind of thing. So there is a working group currently that are working on this idea that is composed by me, a colleague of mine, Joel Dunning from the guy behind Single SPA, and Zach, that is the big brain behind Mojo Federation. And we are trying to socialize a few ideas at the moment. We are still early stage, but we already started to have some interesting discussions, and we're trying to have a regular cadence meeting. So hopefully at some point later this year, you will see our work up and running.
Is there a place that we can go kind of get some more information about that today, or are you guys kind of just doing that on your own privately?
At the moment, we are socializing privately because we need to understand what it means, because it could be this idea could be solved at server side, could be solved at the client side, could be solved in both areas. So we are trying to understand first what are the pros and cons. And trying to, based on all the experience that we have put together, where we are, and if when we start to have something concrete, definitely we are going to release probably the RFCs. Then we are going to share more information around the approach that we are taking and why we are taking the approach. Because one thing that I hate is, this is the library, go for it. But it's, for me, it's by far more interesting understanding the reasoning that led that maintainer to go through this decision over another one.
That so makes a lot I of have sense. A team member who is trying to solve this problem for one of our clients right now. I might do an email introduction so you guys can kind of talk about that, because he's coming at it from like purely an Angular perspective, but is hitting this same, how do we solve these very necessary things to reduce risk of deployment? So that's super cool.
Yeah, super happy to chat with him.
I'll go ahead and just tease up our next episodes too for the listeners. So Luca just mentioned Joel, who's I think the kind of the primary maintainer of Single SPA. And so we're going to have Joel on the podcast here in, I think, the next episode to talk about Single SPA. And then we're also going to be talking to Zach about Webpack and Module Federation. So if those topics sound interesting to you, certainly stay tuned as we release new episodes, and we'll be taking a deep dive into both of those topics. So definitely stay tuned, hit that subscribe button, smack it, whatever you got to do. I don't know. What's smash the influencer Ryan. Say? Smash
the
it.
The cool kids say smash it.
I'm obviously not an influencer. I said smack it instead of smash it. Jeez. That's it. I think
who's going to sue us for a broken keyboard?
But I think those topics are going to be really interesting. So if this sounds interesting to you, certainly check those out. Any other questions, Nicole, Jennifer? Luca, anything else that you want to kind of mention in terms of, as people are getting started into the world of Single SPA, is there some good resources out there? Obviously, you've got the book from O'Reilly. Why don't you go ahead and pitch that to us, as well as give us other information in terms of how can I get started and learn more about about micro front ends?
Yeah, sure. So, the book that I wrote basically it took me roughly 2 years for finishing. But it was on purpose. At some point, I arrived that I wrote 80% of the book, and there were missing the two or three chapters. And I stopped on purpose because I had to validate broadly in different industries many of the patterns and the ideas that I had. And to be honest, many of the questions that I have experienced during my talks, I did in the last few years on microfrontends only roughly 100 talks around the world. I gather all the questions. I try to understand if there were overlaps, and I try to answer if I didn't have an answer on those questions. And all the information that I gather in the last years are inside the book. Also, I wrote a lot of articles just to socialize certain ideas, see what kind was resonating well with the community, wasn't, what I had to go more in deep. So I would say that the book basically is not only my point of view, is answering the several questions that I had from the community. And moreover, I decided to take a different angle from, there is another great book, for other two great books on microfrontends. One is called Microfrontends in Action, and the other one is The Heart of Microfrontends. So Michael that wrote the Microfrontends in Action, it was very technical. So he went through the every single implementation and described through example through code example the way how it would implement specific things, and I think it was not useful for the community replicating exactly that in from different publishers. So what I thought instead is focusing on the mental models. So the problem I have often is that the front-end developers is focusing a lot on the framework and slightly less on what there is behind the framework. If we're capable to, let's say instead, providing and basically unwinding this complex thing of taking the abstraction and making it easier to digest, then it doesn't matter if today is one framework or another one, you will be able to survive and tweak your implementation in the right way because you have the mental model. And that's something that I have seen in my 18 years of career. I moved from a developer perspective, I felt in love with several frameworks and I really mastered them. But what really resonated with me in the long run was the fact that I knew the patterns, the architecture, the fact that, for instance, I took the microservice architecture and applied to the front end. It wasn't done, let's say, randomly. It was because I understood the patterns. I know how the benefit that it was bringing to me. And I applied to the front end to see if there was ways to solve the same problem in the same way. And it worked, in my opinion. So that's why I'm saying my book is more focused on that. There are implementation and code examples, but it's not, let's say, fully detailed only on code, because I believe code implementation is a detail compared to the complexity on creating a distributed system. And that's why, for instance, also building microservices from Sam Newman, it was designed that if you check the book, you don't find many code examples. But a lot of reasoning, a lot of experience from the trenches, because that is the one that make successful a distributed system. Apart from that, as I mentioned, the other two books, the other things you can find a couple of interesting videos on YouTube. So if you search for microfrontends, I think there is in Free Code Camp and a very interesting training on micro frontends that is fully free. You can find that in YouTube. So that is a very cool resource. And then if you search on Medium, there are plenty of articles on case studies on micro frontends, how to do things with micro frontends. And let's say it's getting a lot of traction. Recently, there was also a couple of months ago a conference, a microfrontends conference online, where PayPal, for instance, shared their insights on how they communicate between microfrontends. And the three things that I mentioned before are mentioned also from them. So that, let's say, made me smile when I saw that talk, because it means that I'm not the only one thinking that a lucid couple high align is the right way to do so. So, and there are, let's say, many resources nowadays that are starting to bubble around the community.
Awesome. And then if people want to find specific content from you, where are you available on the internet?
Any social network with my first name and last name, definitely. And then feel free to ping me. I'm very sociable, as you have seen, hopefully. I tend to reply to everyone. I really like, let's say, discussing this topic, because it basically was part of my life. I'm still researching and trying to unwind complex problem on this topic. So if you have something that maybe you find difficult or you think that currently is not addressed, feel free to reach me out and more than happy to share with you what I think. And if I don't have an answer, figure it out together.
That's awesome.
I've had so many aha moments in this conversation. So thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us. It's been awesome.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this was great. So if you have like one final takeaway from the audience, what do you hope they get out of listening to this episode?
That the architecture is a trade-off. Therefore, don't think that there is right or wrong. Try to think what is the less worse option that you have, and then iterate on that with the regular cadence if it still hurts. Because if it still hurts, it probably you didn't fully solve the problem. So you need to find a different angle and document that. Because today you will remember that, but in 6 months' time, probably no one will remember why a certain decision was made. So architectural decision record and request for comments are your best friends. So more you document, and better will be in a few months' time reviewing the decision you made and understand if it's still valid or not.
I feel like we should charge for this episode. This is just such good information for everybody. Yes, just thank you so much for joining us and for bringing your expertise on our audience and helping us in our audience start our micro front-end journey.
You're welcome.
And that's another episode of the Angular Plus Show. Thanks to our hosts, Laura Newsom, Nicole Oliver, and Brian Love. Special thanks to our producers, Brian Smitha and Loyal Carlon, for harnessing our squirrel energy. And thanks to our founders, Joe Eames, Aaron Frost, the entire ng-conf team, and to all our sponsors and subscribers for making this episode of the Angular Plus Show possible. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for a future episode, contact us at theangularplusshow.com/contact, or you know you can slide into our DMs on Twitter at @AngularShow. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Angular Plus Show.